Welcome to The Emergence, a podcast asking the question, what is possible when we are connected and in control? Today, I have Christian de la Huerta on the show, who is the author of the book, Awakening the Soul of Power, How to Live Heroically and Set Yourself Free. I discovered Christian through a service called PodMatch to help podcasters and guests find each other. When Christian offered to come on the show, of course, I was interested, but I was also hesitant to bring on a guest just to discuss a book. And this is not what The Emergence is about. But there was something about the title that intrigued me, even though I didn't understand where he was coming from with the phrase soul of power. After reading the book, I now get the title. Power is not inherently bad. It is what we do with it that counts. My favorite quote from the book, it really hit home with me, which is, so you want to be a courageous explorer? Dare to go within. Now, this is at the very fabric of how we could build more resonant communities, how we could help build better societies, to tap into the potential of what lies within people to help themselves and others. My question is, how could communication technology help awaken this soul of power within us and the communities we live in? So let me bring Christian on to learn more about his book and maybe unpack a few ideas of how technology may be able to help. So how are you doing, Christian?
I'm doing great, Paul. Thanks so much for having me on the show. And I love the introduction and the way you framed it.
Good. Well, thank you. I like to surprise people a little bit just so I can get their natural reactions to it, being too prepared for it. So towards the end of the conversation, I'd like to dig in about technology, but I really want to start in about your book, which I really, really enjoyed quite a bit. So why don't we start off with telling me a bit about your background and what inspired you to write the book?
Well, I was born in Cuba. I lived there in a communist regime for the first 10 years of my life, which, you know, I write that it's kind of interesting that I'm writing about personal empowerment when I come from such a hierarchical power structure, in a communist totalitarian regime where there is very little personal power, where the state pretty much owns you and tells you what to do and what you're going to study and what, you know, there's so many liberties that we take for granted here in the U.S. that are just not available. And then also I was raised in a very Catholic environment. So another hierarchical power over institution in which one is told what to believe, what is right, what's wrong. And there's very little flexibility around that. So interesting, again, that I'm on a journey and have been on a journey to not only do it for myself, but help other people find a way to step into their power. And I think the inspiration to think about this came from two areas. One was my older sister. I'm one of nine kids, so thereby evidence of the Catholic upbringing. My sister's 2 years older. And, you know, she was one of these natural born leaders when we were growing up. She bossed around not only the nine of us, but the entire neighborhood of 15, you know, 20 kids. And it was just a very natural thing. Like she would say, oh, let's go do that. And everybody would just say, yeah, okay, let's go do that. When she hit puberty, something happened. Like she just turned that thing off. And I don't know whether she got that from where somebody actually said something to her or whether she just picked it up from osmosis that women didn't behave in that way. But she turned it off and she assumed this kind of, you know, Mother Teresa personality. And so that was always kind of in the back of my head because I know that she's not the only woman who suppresses power. And by the way, not only women do, men do as well, but I think women have an additional layer of stuff that they have to work through in terms of getting clear about our relationship to power. Because, let me tell you, the other thing that inspired it is I had a couple of years, you know, a few years ago, maybe 8 years ago or so, I had submitted a proposal to a literary agent in New York. And she said, yeah, great. I want to work with you, but I want to see some of these marketing ideas implemented before we pitch a publisher. And I don't know if you've ever seen a book proposal, but it's like a huge term paper with a huge marketing analysis and who's the audience and why are you the person to write this book and what is your plan for reaching this audience, et cetera. And so when she said implementing the marketing plan, that would have probably taken me a year. So like slammed on the brakes. And for like a few days, like, it kind of sent me into question, into crisis, because I was already spending the advance in my mind.
Oh, sure.
And, yeah. And, but it was a really, really helpful process, because I eventually asked myself, if I weren't writing for an advance, if I were just writing, like, what would I really feel compelled to write about? And like, after 3 days, it just dawned on me. About a month before, sitting in meditation, for only the second time in my life, I heard audible words, like actual audible words, and they were the soul of power. And I got up, I was like, huh, what an interesting concept. And I got the URL and forgot about it. Flash forward a month later, when I'm in this crisis moment, and it was one of those palm of the hand to the forehead moments. Is like, duh, you know, if I've been saying for years that the empowerment of women is the single most important thing that happens in the world, mm-hmm. Then what am I doing about that specifically? And to be clear, I'm not idealizing women. I'm not putting women up on a pedestal. I'm not adding more stuff for women to have to clean up and clear up in this world. It's because as a world, as a species, we've been running very off balance in terms of power dynamics. And that system is not working for anybody, including men. And we can talk about that too.
Absolutely.
So power, you know, soul of power, empowerment of women, like, how do we do it in a different way that is not this hierarchical power over, I'm going to push you down and step on you. In order to prop myself up and feel powerful, and the kind of power that is fear, force, domination, control, manipulation. How do we do power in a different way? And that's when I started thinking about all this.
Yeah, and that really is brilliant, because when I very first, like I said in my intro, when I saw the title of your book, The Soul of Power, Awakening the Soul of Power, I didn't really grasp it. And not that people wouldn't, but it's, the way that I have my podcast and my writings over a number of years, it's about the emergence, and it's really about empowering the individual. And as I started to read your books, like, yeah, that's because it's one thing to see a title and it capture your attention. It's another thing to really resonate with deep within you. And I know that there's a lot of themes in your book about deep inside, and that's everything I write about. I just talk about technology, being able to tap into it. You're talking about what resides in us. And I think there should be a meeting place between technology and what you write about.
Without a doubt.
And the soul, I mean, the soul of power. I mean, when you're really just dig into that, and when you talk about the matriarchal and you talk about the women, I can't agree with you more, because really, when you think about society over the next 100 years, 200 years, I mean, women are the ones who birth. So there's that bond that exists. And if you strengthen that bond, then the men and the women coming from that will also strengthen, and therefore we'll have a stronger society. So the soul of power is amazing. Yes.
Exactly. And it's just the way that I think about it, like thinking strategically, like, what is one thing that are going to impact everything else that we're facing as a species? And that's what I land on. When women are in 50% of power, we're going to have a very different relationship to war and poverty and hunger and how we treat the environment and social justice and wealth distribution and all of it. So for me, it's just strategic. And of course, the way that women have been oppressed is just like absolutely no longer acceptable. It's like way overdue for a correction, for a course correction. And here's the important part for men to realize that. Men are also paying a power for this system of, you know, whether you call it toxic masculinity, power over, hierarchical thinking. It doesn't work for men either. So let's look at some numbers quickly. In this country, women outlive men by 5 years. Globally, by 7 years. You look at the rates of suicide in the U.S., men commit suicide 4 times as frequently as women. And 70% of the suicides in this country are committed by middle-aged white men, which are still the main repositories, you know, the main holders of power in this world. So what's up with that? What is wrong with that picture? Why is that the case? And I think that part of it is because we've gotten this twisted idea in our minds about what it means to be a man, and what it means to be a woman. So we've anything that's we have labeled feminine, we have turned into weakness. Whereas, like, wait a minute, you want to talk power? Let's talk about the power of creation that resides in a female body. And then everything that we've so what happens is that men have concluded, like, ever since we were boys, you're like, little boys don't cry. So we walk around like these uncaring, unfeeling robots, or at least on the outside. And we are so inept in dealing with our emotions that we just suppress them. We run away from the emotions because somewhere along the way, somebody decided that that was weakness. It's like, wait a minute. The emotions are not weakness. They're not strength. They're not good. They're not bad. They're just energies like everything else. In creation, what used to be spiritual teaching that everything is energy, now we know from quantum physics that everything is in fact energy. That includes the body. That includes the emotions. We know energy cannot be destroyed. So just because we suppress it and we don't allow ourselves, we don't allow ourselves to deal with our emotions, that stuff doesn't go away. It sticks in the tissues of our body. And we walk around with layers upon layers upon layers of unresolved and suppressed emotional crap, which then we try to have a relationship in the present moment, and it's all getting filtered through that lifetime of suppressed emotional crap and unresolved past trauma. It's like, it blows my mind how any relationship can work, because we haven't been taught how to hold them, how to approach them. And we haven't been taught how to clear ourselves from all that repressed emotion, which, by the way, has to come out one way or another. So it's either going to, we suppress, and then finally the wrong person just rubs us in the wrong way at the wrong moment, and boom, we explode inappropriately, and we cause harm to our relationships. Or absolutely, we suppress, that energy has to come out. It's going to start seeping out in physical symptoms, heart attacks, cancer, ulcers. So there's just no way around it. We've got to learn how to master our emotions, which means being able to feel them and learning how to communicate them in a responsible, courageous, and graceful way. Which to me, it's nothing less than mastery. It's the opposite of weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole mastery thing to me is that's where I come with technology. It's a tool set. What you're saying is really powerful, because the thing that I feel is that it is that if it's that energy, that it really there, you have the kind of the male dominant and the female dominant, but then there's layers of culture and skin color outside of that and where we come from. And this is really beyond, because if we see our true selves, we will then bypass the color and we will bypass the religious background and or the no religion. And the one thing that I really want to kind of hit on is the fact that what I try to do, I always try to play the middle on things. I really try to exercise both sides, other than the extremes. I just don't have any room for the extremes. But it's the fact of what can I, you know, I have friends that I went to high school with, and I see them on Facebook, and they're Marines, and they're kind of hurrah fellows, right? So there's a lot of and when you see with our elections in the past, and I really want to speak to them as well. I don't want to just speak to the people that are naturally inclined to it. And that's what I kind of get out of your book on some of the stories you're telling, is that this is something to bring people in. It's not to threaten their masculinity. It's not to threaten anything. It's about the fact of could there be tool sets for you to really explore where the strengths that you had to go fight a war. I think you talk about this in the book, you know, the strengths that you have to fight a war, what could those be? What could those do to be able to fight injustice, or to fight even with your relationship with your significant other, to be able to overcome some things? So that's really, I want you to kind of bubble up on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Paul. That's a beautiful way of framing that, the way you just did. Yeah, of course, it's not about making men wrong. It's, of course not. And, you know, the way you're talking about humanity is like our DNA is 99.99% the same. Yeah. So we talk about different races. That doesn't even cut it, right? There's not enough difference in terms of DNA to be considered a different race. So literally, we are one human race. The variations are so superficial. And interestingly, we share 96.4% of our DNA with chimps.
Yep.
And 50% of our DNA is identical to bananas. So let's begin to expand the sense of interconnectedness that is a reality on this earth. So that's why I added specifically a chapter. So like a lot of the book has a focus on the empowerment of women, but we can't leave men behind. And which is part of the reason so many men are struggling is because of technology and so many jobs that are being either outsourced or replaced by machines. And as women are reclaiming their power, and more than 50% of college graduates today are women. So the wage gap is being reduced. And so as women are stepping into their potential, a lot of men, because of all those reasons, are feeling kind of left behind, or they're losing their footing. They don't know who they are anymore. If my spouse, if my wife makes more than I do, then who am I? When my identity is so connected to being the provider. And so that's why there's so many men in particular that are holding on to old ways of doing things, you know, like the way it used to be in the 50s, which didn't work. It didn't work. It mainly worked for a very few people at work, not for the rest of humanity. But it's this idealization about the way things used to be. And then the problem is that they blame immigrants, for example, or people that don't look like them, as the source of the problem. Well, the problem is way more complex than that. And so much of the jobs are not being taken over by other people, because a lot of the immigrants are taking jobs that Americans don't want to take. But anyway, it's a complex issue, but it's really to like scapegoat part of what the problem is, rather than looking at ourselves. So part of what I try to do in that chapter is like, wait a minute, dudes, what does it mean to be a man? Like, there is so much that it means to be a man that is more than being a provider. And there are so many other ways in which you can provide. Like, you know, what about providing a sense of safety, creating an oasis of safety in your home, a place, an environment in which everybody, all the family members, can thrive and grow and become who they are, or the explorer, like you were talking about. You know, like, there's few places left in the world that haven't yet been explored, unless we go like way deep in the ocean or out into outer space. But what about the inner world? Like, for the most part, remains vastly unexplored, and that's where all the answers to all our questions are. And if we want to be free, if we want to like really step into our power, if we want to step into our purpose and fulfill our unique human potential, we've got to be willing to go inside. There's no way around it.
Yeah. And I like to do thought experiments once in a while. So I'm on top of my head now. I think about the most extreme case of somebody that would be difficult to explore their power. You know, somebody that is a quadriplegic, that is of color, that is gay, that is living in a ghetto somewhere, and you know, has had all these behavioral traits that have been impounded on them, that have been, you know, placed on them by their family. And to me, that person has enormous potential that is inside of them. But who was asked? You know, that's my point. Who's asking? You know, right. And where are they asking the question? Are you of service to us in a general, or what is of service to you and to others? I mean, those little specific things that person could have a thought process that somebody on the other side of the continent could have extreme value with. You know, they could solve a genetic code of, you know, helping a scientist dig into something where that scientist is missing a pattern of recognition, and something that resides within that person that is just very unique If you align that to that other person that has that need, they all of a sudden are validated. They all of a sudden have self-worth. And you talk about validation and self-worth quite a bit, which I absolutely love. So, you know, are we exploring the general? Are we trying to find a what, you know, bro, what do you have for me? Or is the fact of what's within you, and not in this teary-eyed way. It's like, you know, what really resides within you that can, what's your self-worth? And then not only how's that going to help you, but how's that going to help others? And if we start to kind of decode that through efforts such as yours in writing, and as well as building the technology to help us decode that, to find those strengths, because in that person who's a quadriplegic, who's of color, is in a depressed area, they might find something of value, and that value returns to them, and they start to grow, and they start to feel that they're a part of something. And then they might end up being one of the most powerful people around, because they came from such a place to where they overcame it. And then what lessons could they bring to others to help, you know, fulfill that connection? And when you say, you're talking about interconnectedness, that is, and that's where when I started reading your books, like, man, that is it, the soul of power. It's that interconnectedness when we reach deep inside.
Yeah. And that's the one of the ways in which technology can really support us, is it's in that interconnectedness. The internet, like, I mean, what talk about a global brain, and talk about, you know, ways of, like, what you used to have to, you know, walk out of your life and go off to some far away monastery or ashram to get morsels of wisdom. Now it's just like available to anybody on the internet. And we have ways of connecting with each other that just boggle the mind. Like, going back to this example that you're giving, like, how many YouTube pieces have we seen, videos have we seen on people who have overcome insurmountable obstacles? Yep. And we see it right there in front of our eyes. You know, people accomplishing incredible feats, you know, painting, people who have no arms and no legs and painting with their mouth, just incredible stuff, which is very inspirational. And it also calls each and every one of us to our greatness, because one thing we know is that life is going to continue throwing curveballs our way, like, yeah, that we can count on. And there isn't a thing that we can do about that. But what we always, always have choice about is how we show up in response to that. And because as long as we're whole, if we're on a journey of personal empowerment, as long as we're holding anyone or anything outside of us responsible for our state of being, right? So we blame our happiness or lack thereof because mom did this, or dad wasn't there, or the teacher or the minister or society or sexism or racism or homophobia. And not to deny that those things are there and have an effect, and that the system is stacked against some people more than others.
Yes.
Not denying any of that, or not denying anything that happened or any trauma that anybody ever experiencing. And when we reframe it in that way, like, how will I show up in response to the curveballs that life will continue to throw my way? That's very empowering, as opposed to always, you know, as long as we're holding what somebody did or the way the system is responsible for our state of being, we just gave our power away.
Yes. Yes. And then, you know, on the other side of that coin too, of my thought experiment, is on the other side of how people perceive it, the empathy. So you write about empathy, which is a you know, which ego gets in the way of, which you write about. And, you know, so a traditional worker, a traditional employer sees that person in my thought experiment that's a quadriplegic and is of color and doesn't have money. And, you know, until we use these tools to be able to help everybody see the value. And that's, I think, that the things that's missing. And that's one of the things I really talk about and write about in my essays, is the fact of this connection is highly influenced to where, you know, it's pushing information to us as opposed to pulling it from us. And if we had a better tool set for people to really have a better understanding of who that person is on that thought experiment and what value is that, to allow them to see that. You know, another example that I've talked about in my podcast past is George Floyd and Derek Chauvin. And, you know, there's no easy solution to that. You can talk about reforming the police and all of that, and that's great. And I do agree with that 100%, but it's how you reform the police and, you know, the training and how do they see, and, you know, also how does the community see them? So it's always both sides. Is that, how mm-hmm. is George Floyd seeing the police? Because what has he been through for 20 to 30 years of his life? It's like, yeah, he was on drugs. Why was he on drugs? And so somebody could say, well, he was just on drugs. Well, I'm sorry, to me, that's just not enough. I would like to understand, you know, what was his upbringing? And if we're going to move forward, we've got to have a better understanding of what resides so that we can start to really fix it, as opposed to paint over it with a roller brush of judgment of how we see these things. It's like, seriously, what could be done to help the police have a better understanding? And that's not going to be a magic pill. Believe me, I know that things are difficult on the street. I'm not questioning that, but you know, they're training. When they're trained, I mean, are they trained from companies? Who are these contracts? I mean, are these tools built by the communities for training for police, you know, or is it a big billion-dollar company that has a software contract? I mean, I'm not judging. I'm not saying so, but I would like to find out. That's one of my missions on police reform. I want to get into the details of where the training comes from, how it's done, and is it involved with the community? Because ego, you know, like you talk about it with Derek Chauvin, that, you know, that gets in the way of understanding situations. And that's a powerful piece, is that how we interpret signals from somebody else and how we judge. I do it. I judge people. I really try to say that I don't, but I'm human. And, you know, we all are. So talk a little bit about ego and how that gets in the way of us being able to understand and empathize.
Yeah. And yeah, I love that. And I love the way you think, Paul.
Thank you.
And I think that visual we're just talking about is it's a great visual of talking about this relationship to power, because we've all got this ambivalent relationship to power. We want it, but we're afraid of it. We think we might abuse it, and no wonder. You know, we got to do is on any given day, turn on the news and witness at least one abuse of power, including the one that we were just talking about. So add to that we have been conditioned to believe that power is a negative thing. Power is bad. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. What they didn't tell us, though, is that that quote originally was talking about political power, not personal power. And then add to that what we were saying about the emotions, that we've labeled them weakness. We run away from our emotions. We run away from our feelings. We hate confrontation. We hate conflict. And when you put all that into a mix, what happens is we give our power away. Our inherent power that nobody can give to us, nobody can take away from us, we are the only ones who give it away. And the sad part is that we give it away for the wrong reasons and for unsatisfying reasons. We settle, we play small, we settle for less. We give our power away for an illusion of security, for a false sense of security, and for morsels of pseudo love. And so the whole message of the book is that there is a way that we can step into power that is not hierarchical, that is not power over, that is not power that is expressed by fear or force or domination, that doesn't require for us to push anybody down and put our knee to their neck in order for us to prop ourselves up and feel powerful. Like that there is a way to express power in a way that is a match, that is congruent with who we are. And so to get to that place, there are two things that are critically important. One is understanding the difference between power, between worldly power or ego power, and soulful power. And the conversation about ego is a huge conversation. It's like, it's the first third of the book is all about that. It's a constant in every one of my retreats, because if we want to have a relationships that can have a chance of working, if we want that sense of personal empowerment, if we want to have a life that is filled with meaning and purpose, we've got to understand what the ego is, because that is the source of all our suffering. And, you know, we don't have time to really dive into it now, but a great metaphor, that the great image that helps understand what the ego is if you put a baseball in the center of a stadium, that's what the ego is. Who we are is the stadium. And we've allowed this tiny part of who we are, this tiny aspect of our minds, to think that it is all of who we are, and to make choices, critical, important, consequential choices about our lives, about our professions, about our relationships, from its very small, limited, and always fear-based perspective. So we've got to understand what the ego is so that we can break free from its self-made prison of fear and lack and limitation.
Well, and that is exactly it, for the fact that, you know, it's ego is buried in our more or less our primordial brain to some degree, you know, our brainstem, that, you know, it's not really attached as much to the frontal cortex that has evolved over hundreds of thousands of years. It's, and that's the thing about the way that these quote unquote powerful institutions have built these tools for us to find and discover information are heavily influenced towards our ego, or heavily influenced towards our reactive mind. And that's it plays off our lowest common denominator. And, yes. And what the thing is, and somebody would say, why would they build tools like that? What's the purpose of that? Well, our ego is easier to monetize. And it's hard to argue against that. Our reactive mind is easier to monetize. We go buy things that we don't need. I'm guilty. You know, we read things that we don't necessarily need. We watch movies that are not empowering us or even entertaining us fully, because they want us to scrape off the top. And I say they, I don't think it's this grand conspiracy theory. I just think it's human nature. And the chain of this, so the tools, and this is one of my overarching questions about this, is that people like you should be highly involved with these technologies built forward. Now, you're not going to get, you know, meetings with Facebook and all that, you can, but their algorithms are going to do what their algorithms do, because they're going to monetize that part of our brain. It's what creates profit. It's just the way that it has to be. But the thing about the emergence is to inspire a group of people to build technologies outside of that. And I've had a couple of people on my show before that are building these technologies, and I want to have more in the future. But when we build these tools, I highly recommend they talk to people like you. Do you see what I mean? To be able to, yes. As opposed to building technology to create something, we build technology to help understand so that we can create something. I think we're missing that. What's been built is missing that piece.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think you're actually at the cutting edge of thinking in all this, Paul. And it's exciting, and I'm glad that you've placed yourself in a kind of a nexus point where you can weave and connect people, because so many different people are coming to you. So thank you for that, and then I celebrate and honor your mission in the emergence.
Thank you.
And you know, like here's a tiny example of how to use technology. Like a couple of years ago, I started thinking about, you know, how can I get this message out in a way that's more piecemeal, right? Because we're so distracted by life. We live in such an ADD society. There's so many things pulling our attention in different directions, and we're overwhelmed with information, with sensory information. We're like bombarded with media and emails and texts. It's like, it's crazy the way that we live. So then I thought, all right, like forget about a book. Most people are never going to read any book. How can I impart this information in a way that can actually get to people? So I thought, you know, how about an app? And how about if I could deliver the information in piecemeal, in bite-sized pieces, and using the concept of apps and gaming, how can I turn this into, how can I gamify it? How can I turn it into an interesting way to keep people connected and people wanting to dive deeper? Because it's confrontational work, right? We're asking people to go within and to look at their shadow and to face their inner demons. an incredibly worthwhile effort, because on the other side of that is freedom. But for most people, they're, you know, they're, it's easy to go la 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 and like, oh, let's go watch another movie or another football game or something and not think and to run away from who we really are, which is not a very effective strategy, because all the problems that we're trying to run away from and sweep under the rug, none of that stuff goes away. That's still there, impacting the quality of our life and the quality of our relationships. The app is still in development. But this points to what you're talking about, because just thinking in that way, when I wrote this book, all the thinking that went into the app, I put into place with the book. So rather than having longer chapters, like I did with my first book, so like each chapter was like a term paper kind of thing. In this book, because I went through this thinking process of how to increase participation, the chapters are all very short.
Yes.
And they all have power practices at the end that are designed to get people thinking, right? And to not only thinking, but to apply the teachings to their lives, because that's what's going to make sure that it doesn't stay at the level of information, but that it actually ensures transformation, which is the whole reason to take the time to read a book, so that our lives change and get better and the quality of our relationships improve. Like another use of technology, last year, because of the pandemic, I had all my retreats came to a screeching halt. I've been doing retreats for 30 years. Oh. And I went from 100,000 miles on an airplane to zero.
Yeah.
and so I had to pivot, you know, quickly. And what I've actually known for years that I needed to do if I was going to scale and reach people who may never come to one of my retreats, it's like COVID forced my hand to do it. And so I used that same thinking from the app, and I applied it to a year-long coaching program that, again, technology makes this possible. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I'll go back to doing retreats whenever we can, and I've already scheduled some for the end of the year. And I've also noticed in the past that somebody comes to one of my retreats and they have this amazing, profound, life-changing experience, an expansion of how they view themselves and the relationship to life. And if they don't have a support system when they go back home, if they don't have some kind of practice, it's very easy to get sucked into the day-to-day and all the distractions that we were just talking about. And pretty soon, that expansion begins to contract, and the old voices of fear and self-doubt and the self-sabotaging behavior start creeping up again and pulling them down, and then they got to come to another retreat. What I love about this concept of the yearlings, I stretch out the teachings over the period of a year, so deliver them piecemeal, a little bit of content every week. But here's the difference, here's the key, that interactivity and the gamification, right? So that there are practices that again designed to integrate them into their lives, and then a system of accountability, because we all need the support, because of it's so easy to get distracted, and because inertia is such a powerful force in our lives. So the accountability is two levels of it. One is coaching calls with me every 2 weeks, and then in between weeks they have small pods, you know, 2-3 people, power pods, I call them. And it could be, that could be just a 5-minute call, but it's just like, hey, did you do what you said you were going to do? Just to keep
sure
that support and accountability going.
Yeah, that's absolutely. When you're talking about your app and these things, is that in your book, there's so many, you use the power of stories. And I don't know if you're familiar with some of these historic technologies. There's Douglas Engelbart, who invented the mouse, but he also did something called the mother of all demos. And there's Vannevar Bush that wrote an essay called As We May Think. And they proposed these systems of connectivity before the PC was built that is more of an interconnected within documents, as opposed to going to a book and then reading the whole book. They envisioned a future of our connection was within what we think, as opposed to just you know, whenever I talk to you, we don't talk about paragraphs, right? We right. reference, when we remember our conversations, we remember to a certain thing. We don't say, oh, I've got to go to page 23. So, you know, one thing I was thinking about within your book, the story of, I don't know how to pronounce her name, your guru that you had.
Maya.
Yeah. And that story in of itself, when I think about that being broken outside of that book, that other people could relate to your journey with her and then what you learned with the breathing exercises and how that ended up where she ended up not wanting to be a guru, that the arc of that, you know, not everybody that's going to read your book is necessarily going to relate to that, but of the people that would relate to that could be an introduction to your book. So breaking those little narratives out, and like you said too, with instruction and you know, and recapping and things like that, is that that is the power of these stories of, you know, you have your own behaviors that was modeled by your situation with your family and what you had to do. That imparts the way that you see the story and the way that you tell the story. But other people, there's other people out there that could really relate to that and resonate with them, so where that could be an introduction into your other thoughts. Do you see what I'm saying? Is that if we introduce ourselves to the power within, then it could introduce us to other things to keep us interested, to keep us flowing, as opposed to, okay, chapter 23, chapter 2. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm getting it. Let me ask you this to see if I'm getting it. So rather than like what these guys were envisioning, I know I didn't know their work, but I'm fascinated about what you're saying. So this is what I'm hearing you say. Let me know if I'm getting your explanation.
Sure.
So are you saying that rather than have a sequential book, that because we don't know the models, because that sequential process is not the way that doesn't mirror the way that we normally learn, so that what you're seeing the possibility of is I don't even know how what you call it, but I guess let's call it book for lack of another word, but that would, you could access different parts of it non-sequentially, and then they would take you in a different path.
Yes. And that's already being, that has been built, and that is, it's hyperlinking. So when you go to a web page, when you search on Google, it doesn't hyperlink you to within the page. It takes you to the beginning of the page. Now there is technology that you can code that, but you think about these paragraphs think about the most inspirational paragraph you've ever written, not even this book. All right. And then you think about the meat of what went behind that, what you had to live to be a part of that. And so, you know, of the first thing that somebody discovers Christian on, you know, the just the core of who you are, and they discover that, and then they don't, okay, buy a book on Amazon for, you know, $19.99. I'm not saying that's bad at all, by the way. I'm you know, rethinking the future of the web is you know, what deeply resides within us, and what's the context that surrounds that paragraph. And I'm not saying they don't read the book, but what I'm saying is that they come across that paragraph and they learn more about you, and then the books that you've written, they are now, because of that paragraph or sequences of paragraphs, take them to the book that most relates to them that you've written. So as opposed to here's Christian, here's the books, choose from them. Here's Christian, what he thinks, and then let's help you map the best book. And then they might end up reading all your books, but maybe not all of them do. Maybe it's not all. I mean, everything I say is not going to be relatable, and some could argue not much. I'm a little bit out there. Obviously, you figure that out, but which I embrace it, man. I love it. I don't apologize for it at all. I am who I am.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So it's just this interconnection. That's what the emergence is. If you don't mind, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story of how I came across the emergence, because I think you'll really get it. But
no, I would love that. And by the way, you're expanding my way about how to impart a message.
Oh, well, thank you. Forward. Yeah. And you're helping me. I mean, that's what this is about, man. This is not just one-sided. I mean, when I read your book, it blew my mind. It really did. And this is the thing about the emergence. So I've been writing about this stuff for 20 years. I've been thinking about this stuff for 20 years. And my wife told me, she's like, what are you, you know, everything that you talk about all these years, it's like, you're so depressed over because you can't get out. Why don't you start meditating? And I, you know, 3 years ago, I said, okay, I give, because every time I try to come up with something, it's just, it just feels like I'm just talking against a wall. And she goes, no, just start meditating and think of a flow of water. And boy, as soon as she told me that, it's like, oh my God. She goes, you don't need to be part of the flow. Maybe these ideas are out there and maybe you need to meditate to slow your brain down. And I said, I don't have a slow brain. What are you talking about? I started meditating and it took me about a year. And then I went to a bookstore, Bookman's in Phoenix. And I was so incredibly kind of depressed over the whole thing where I couldn't get what I was thinking about into a plan, you know, into just an idea that was consumable. And so I told myself my meditation, I'm going to go to this bookstore and the first book I put my hand on is going to help me take me in that direction. And so I put it in my intro of my podcast, but it sounds so weird, but I meditated outside. I went in there, I found a section that's probably going to be more relatable and technology and business. And then I just literally closed my eyes and put my hands on the book called The Emergence, The Connective Lives of Ants. And
The Collective Lives of Ants?
Yes. And cities and building cities. So I would highly recommend you read this book. It's fascinating. And it's about the fact of the ant communities work without the instruction of the queen ant. They provide pheromone trails to connect with each other, to be able to let them know, you know, where is the best place to bury the dead? Where's the best place to hide the food? They don't get that instruction from the centralized governing force of a queen ant. They get it from each other. And that's why, okay, man, that's exactly what I've been thinking of, but I didn't know what it was. You know, I don't, you've obviously had these before where there's something that is what it is that you've been thinking about forever and you don't really know how to articulate it. I mean, how can it become an idea if you can't articulate it?
Yes.
And that's why you helped me with your book, because there were several ideas I was able to get that you articulated that I hadn't thought of. And I'm going to reread it again because I want to have more time to really make some better notes. Towards the end, I kind of cheated and I just made some quick notes because I was running out of time, but I really want to dig into that again and I'll read some more of your books. But you know, that's what I'm talking about, that interconnected. The paragraph is that pheromone trail from another ant. And if it really, and the way they do that is that the stronger the chemical trace, the more that the other ants will go to follow them. And so, but it's not coming from the queen ant. You see what I mean? If the queen ant is instructing them to follow, then just the sheer measure of power is going to, it's just going to want to monetize them. You know what? them for power, for money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. But you're talking about the difference between power over versus power with. And I love that. And I love that your story embodies what we're talking about too, because the way that you approached this, the way that you got to the emergence was by going within and by accessing your intuition, your inner knowing, which is all the realm of the stadium, not the ego. Like if you had if you approached this logically, strategically from the level of ego planning, then there's no way you would have landed on that. Intuition, you're just like, bam, we're right for the book that you needed at that particular point.
Yeah. And you hit on that the way that you wrote your book too. I mean, it's so true. It's so true within all of us. You know, my wife, and which I'll be candid with you, I'm actually separated from my wife, and it took that separation to realize how good of a friend she was. So that's the person that helped me unlock this. At that time, I was going through a separation at that very time. And you know, the person that, you know, I was no longer going to be with at that level is the very person who helped me the most. And I can't even tell you how much I love my, you know, we're not divorced, but we're separated. But it's that. And that's the thing, is that I did. And she would teach me about ego. And I've always had that, you know, well, I'm going to create something so special in the future. I know it. She'd heard me talk about that crap for so long. And she was the one to really uncover that for me, because it is ego. I was sitting there overthinking it, and I still overthink, ask all my friends. but I'm a notorious overthinker, but you know, I use some of that for thinking. Ego absolutely got in my way, because I had built technology in the past called Quired.com with a friend and another partner. And that was all about ego. When I did that, I spent money. It was just, I, you know, my tagline was move you forward. And I was going to build this platform back in 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9. And it was about moving people forward. And I reflect back on that. And that thing was so steeped in my own ego to where I was trying to build something that I didn't even know what it was. And I was spending money on it. And, you know, and that was the reason that I had to meditate, because I was so frustrated on the failures that I had in trying to do my own thing. And it was the fact of calming my mind and just letting it go, letting the ego get out of the way. It's still, believe me, I'm a work in progress. Trust me.
But it always is. We all are.
Yeah. And I'm able to forgive myself for not getting, because my thing is now it's not about money. It used to be about money for me, and it's not about money. It's about connecting with interesting people like you that, and it's not going to be my ideas. It's going to be your ideas that my job is to connect interesting and intelligent people from all walks of life. I don't care how much money you make, what the color of your skin is, your gender, whatever. I don't give a flying shit, if you excuse my language. I want to connect people that are really interested in building these things to help move us forward. And that goes back to choir, move you forward. But I had to spend 20 years to get around my mind on that, to really figure out it was about just getting out there and talking about these things and meeting interesting people who can help build it.
Yeah, Paul, and absolutely. And I love what you're doing. And I, yes, that you are a connector, but your contribution is far more than that, because you, the way that you approach it, which is like you're balancing the masculine and the feminine, right? The masculine, yes, and the feminine energies. You've got this amazing, brilliant, logical, scientific, engineering systems mind, and you're also accessing your intuition and other ways of knowing. And not only are you accessing it, but you're living it. And you're taking a stand and creating an opportunity for discussion in which that can continue forward. And that's what we need, right? If we expect for there to be balance in the world, it has to start within each one of us. And you're on your way to doing that. Like, you're living that.
I am. And I appreciate it. And I have no expectations. Another thing that Sharon would tell me about is manage your expectations. I have no expectations of it. And you came on this PodMatch app. And I found about PodMatch, and I didn't really know, and knowing my luck, because I haven't been able to get anybody on for a while. I've asked a number of people and they haven't got back with me, and I thought, okay, I'm going to try it. And it's just, and I'd done a couple of meditations before that. And when you came in and said you're interested in the show, I wasn't expecting it whatsoever. And then I read the title. I was like, whoa, this is kind of a little bit weird, because of all the people, because I looked at all the people on the network on PodMatch, and that's cool. I mean, not judging anybody, but I want to roll the sleeves.
It's just like, what's a match for what you're doing and what's not a match?
Yeah. And you came up and I started reading your books, like, oh my God, he's talking the other side. I talk the technology. He's talking the back end of that, which is, he could be relatable. And one of my weaknesses is that relatability. I get so caught up in my own mind that I have a hard time. People like you have to bring it out of me, to be honest with you, because I get so self-involved on these ideas that, and you seem to be a type of a person with your retreats and things like that, you can really make the human connection. And I do think that's important, is that engaging with somebody at that, not so much cerebral, but as an emotional level. And that's the thing I think you'll help me with as I read your book, to discover some more of those traits.
Yeah. I love that. And I think you're right. I think where we're longing to connect with each other is at a much deeper place that is beyond logic and beyond understanding. And that is more in that realm of the stadium that doesn't have the same rules. It has different laws of physics even, which we then translate, because we don't have the language for it, but we translate it like using words like miracles and magic. I think you're absolutely right. And by the way, I don't have that impression of you like stuck in your head at all. Like, this conversation has been amazing and very connected, and flowing very easily from one profound thought to another. So I beg to differ with your perception of what you just said.
Well, yeah.
I think you are very relatable.
Yeah, I guess in the right setting, you know, me at a bar, you know, I just, it's my thing is that I'm not one to really chit chat. So I've never had the ability to just go and talk about the weather or sports. You know, I like to get, I can't tell you how much I enjoy this conversation. It's at my core. And I love to learn when I talk to people, and I love to learn about their experiences and what they're offering. And so I think I have too much of an expectation that my son tells me, he's like, Dad, can you just go talk to somebody and just chill? I said, okay. my son, who's 20 years old, is teaching me all these things as well, because, you know, he just, you got to relax, and it's hard for me to relax. So, but
and I'm like you too. It's like, I don't do chit chat. I don't bullshit. I don't do BS. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't have time for that. When I meet somebody, I want to get to know who they are, what makes them tick.
Yeah.
What they're passionate about.
Yes.
What they're here for.
Yeah. It's all lessons, and we learn, and we meet people that, you know, we've met each other, and I'm learning. One thing I want to say before we get off is that baseball stadium analogy that you had was so incredibly powerful, because I have my own story on that. Talking about my son, who's 20 now, but back when he was probably 10 years old, we were at a baseball stadium. I'm not a big sports guy, but I thought it would be good to expose him to it. And this is the way that Dad thinks. I said, Vaughn, his name is Vaughn. I said, Vaughn, what do you see? All these people. I think there's 28,000 people here. What do you see? He goes, Dad, I don't know. What are you talking about? What, all these people? I see that guy eating popcorn. I said, no, I see potential. and when you say that about their baseball team, it is true. And when you're talking about the reference of the baseball in the middle of the stadium, is that, you know, every single person there has enormous potential, and every one of them. And, you know, that the idea about the ego is the baseball is just, it's so powerful to me. But that kind of wraps up the whole story to me, is about the fact of us getting in our own way and, you know, using these tool sets, whether it's technology or just intuition and emotion that you're sharing, it's all the same thing. And I think that should be the arc going forward, is really fighting for these things and what you're doing and really what I'm doing.
Exactly. Adam, I'm really excited to connect with you. Like, what you're up to is intellectually and spiritually stimulating for me. Like, I think you and I could have kept on going for another hour.
Oh, yeah, we could.
Of conversation. And I hope that we will, because I'd love to stay in touch and stay connected. And you know, who knows? Who knows how we can support each other and support the emergence.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. And I'd love to support what you're doing. And I think you're just getting into the very tip of where you're going to go with these things, to, because it's your message is so incredibly powerful and so incredibly needed for the young men, the young women, especially. I mean, I see some of these things that they're taking on the masculine, the bad side of masculine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so incredibly important to the things you're working on. So yes, I hope to stay in touch with you and absolutely. And Christian, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on and how much I've learned from you and how much I appreciate it.
I loved it, Paul. I love the connection and the conversation, and thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
All right. And maybe we'll have you on the show in the future as well sometime and talk about some other things and deeper dive, and we'll see what shakes out.
I'd love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Christian, and everybody. Thank you for tuning into this episode, and we'll talk to you soon.